Hi, welcome to Visual Studio Toolbox. I'm your host, Robert Green, and my guest today is Dimitri Lealin. Hey, Dimitri.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me on again.
Thanks for coming on. You're on, so there must be new bits.
Oh, yeah, new bits.
You are the guy that comes on when there are new bits.
I'm one of the guys that comes on, yeah.
You know, astute watchers will remember that the episode you were last on, Visual Studio 2012 Update 2.
Seems like yesterday.
Most watched episode of this show ever.
That's awesome, man.
And we're going to try and beat that record today.
Yeah, 100,000 views, I think we broke, right?
More than that, yeah.
More than that, awesome.
Yeah. Cool. We are here today because it's a great day.
Yeah.
Not only is the day this goes live, we're obviously taping beforehand, don't tell anybody. The day this goes live is the first day of build, very exciting, but it is also the day that two previews are available for download. Can you name them?
Yeah, for sure. So we've got Visual Studio 2013 Preview. If I can't name them, we have a problem, right?
Exactly.
So we've got Visual Studio 2013 Preview, and we've got Team Foundation Server 2013 Preview as well. I mean, there's other bits
so
shipping.
So there were three of them.
Well, there's...
Because the other one I was going to mention is Windows 8.1
Preview.
Of
course. Well, yes. I thought we were talking about developer tools, right? And, of course, Visual Studio is going to be quite the enabler for 8.1.
Of course. So Windows 8.1 Preview available. Visual Studio 2013 Preview available. And Team Foundation Service 13 Preview, all available for your downloading pleasure. And what we're going to do in this episode is do a whirlwind tour through Visual Studio 2013
We're going to go
Preview.
Very fast. It should be interesting.
We're going to show a whole bunch of features, and we're going to reference tech ed talks, build talks, blogs. We'll have all of those links for more detail on a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, it's going to be impossible to show everything today, but we're going to hit some highlights, and there's other cool stuff in there, but we'll hit at least some things to get people excited, hopefully, and take a look at the bits beyond that.
So let's go. Let's start.
Yeah, let's start. So first, I want to start with a little bit of a recap of TechEd. A TechEd just here in North America that we just had. So Build and TechEd Europe are happening around the same time, but TechEd North America already happened, for those that missed it. And we released a bunch of new capabilities that were deployed to Team Foundation Service. That's our server in the cloud hosted by Microsoft, tfs.visualstudio.com, free up to 5 people. I keep plugging this thing because not enough people know about it. But those that do have already seen, we've released a ton of great capabilities. Now, what's exciting about Build is that Team Foundation Server 2013 Preview will bring all these capabilities into Visual Studio on-premises product. So those that have been in the cloud with us, they've had the advantage of looking at these features. Now folks can jump in. So we'll do a little bit of a recap. And by all means, Brian Harry and Brian Keller's foundational session is the place to go for getting the full whirlwind tour.
They go TechEd. That's on. Watch that on Channel 9.
Yes,
and
for
we'll
sure.
We'll post links to that.
Yeah, we'll post links to everything. But I'll give you guys some highlights, things that I really like. So let's start off with, and I'm using Team Foundation Service just because, you know, no particular reason. It could be using a server here, but I'll show folks what they can get access to today, even before they get the bits installed. So one of the new capabilities that's really exciting is the idea of team rooms. And team rooms allow teams to collaborate, say activity on their team projects, and it's all through the web access interface. So I'm going to go ahead and click on team room and show you what that looks like. So team room, once it loads, gives you a chat room where you can see who's in the team room. Now, this is demo purposes, so there's more people than we really have here. It's just me and Robert at this point. But you kind of get the idea where you can see a bunch of folks that are in the team room with you. You can also see all sorts of events that you can manage if you go to manage events, so that you can have activity in the team room about code changes, about work item updates, code reviews, build completions. These are all events that you can control to see, hey, do you want this in your team room or not? I love turning everything on because it really lets you collaborate pretty well. So here I go back to the team room itself. You can see we're chatting here like we're far apart. Nope, we are good. So you heard a little pop. That's a sound that the message came in for the team room. So it is audio enabled, and you can kill that if you're being bothered by it. So team room lets you collaborate. But of course, we're just here, just the two of us. It's not really exciting. I want to show you what a kind of a simulated day of activity could look like. And team room lets you go back for history. So you can click on pick a date. Oh, there you go. Look at that, more chat coming in. But we're going to get away from Robert for just a second and go back in time. We're going to click on the 3rd of June. And you can see on the 3rd of June, me and Brian Keller were having a discussion. We had bugs being created, feedback requests being sent out. I'm going to click on the little arrow, and I'm going to see another day, June 4th. Here we actually had builds being completed. We had change sets coming in. So team room why is it for me personally so exciting is this ability to see activity.
What are these bars here?
Sure, so the bars are actually representative of the recent builds. Three of the recent builds failed, and if you do mouse over, you can see it, just like on the homepage. So really a great place with links directly into those ideas that are being represented. So when I see the bug, click on the bug, right? That's going to open up the actual bug that was created and let you see it in detail. So that's a very cool feature. I think everybody should check out Team Rooms. It's awesome that it's coming to on-premises server.
And that is, this is the website, the Team Foundation Service website. So regardless of what version of Visual Studio you're using, then this is available to you.
Yes, this is available today.
Right. It's not tied to a particular version of Visual Studio.
Exactly. This has been deployed since TechEd North America, where we announced it. And on-premises, you get the preview installed, bits installed, and you can go ahead and create team rooms. By default, every team project has a team room now. So you can always customize beyond that. So just a cool little feature. All right. So I'm going to go click live, and there you go. That's the live conversation we're having today. But we're done with team rooms for now. Let's look at another cool feature. Also available for on-premises. So I'm going to go back to my project, and now I'm going to click on the code button here. By clicking on code, I can see recent check-ins, and I can see the changes that were created by those check-ins. So here we have an example where Dimitri made a check-in, change set 46. He checked it in, and he made one modification to a file. Well, the cool thing that we've added is the ability to put comments right on change sets. And this ability lets you select one or more lines of code right here in the web interface. This is only for the web interface. These comments, you can't see them from Visual Studio, but you can see them for the web interface. And you can select, let's say, three lines of code, and you can hit the little icon here that appears to add a comment. Click on that, and now you can go ahead and you can make a comment that says, maybe we shouldn't have changed that. Hit Control Enter, the comment is posted. Somebody else can come in, they can click reply, and they can create a little threaded conversation. The difference between this and Team Rooms, the way that I look at these, I mean, if you look at, we've added two social features, right? The ability to chat with people in Team Room, the ability to comment on change sets and commits for Git through this code interface. The big difference is, this is a really lightweight, this is really free-flowing. Yeah. Team Room, it's recorded, you never delete anything. It's really made as a record of what's going on in your team. So I always tell people, be careful what you put into Team Room. You know, don't say anything silly in there.
Right.
Here, it's a little bit lighter. It's designed for free-flowing conversations. You make a mistake, you can go ahead and hit delete, and your comment will go away.
Okay.
So you don't have to worry about, you know, saying something that you'll regret later. But that's kind of cool. So you can see that's available now, again, in the web interface under a change set, a shelf set, or a Git commit. So that's kind of cool. That's our comments in the web. Another cool feature that we're bringing is under the Work tab. In the Work tab, if we click on Backlog, we have a new button right here, a new hyperlink called Features. This didn't exist before. If you click on Features, you're going to have the ability to create a higher level of abstraction over your team or teams of projects that are happening. So let's make up a scenario here. Let's make believe you have a Team Foundation server set up with two teams working, with two team projects configured. You can now, let's say theoretically, create a third team project, go in there, create a bunch of features. These are higher level goals of the organizations. Maybe one team is a web team and one is, let's say, a mobile apps team. But they all have the same goal to, let's say, integrate search, right? So you create a feature called, I want to have search across, you know, all my applications, web or mobile. The teams can then go, and here I'll show you what happens. You can say features. Well, I want to see features down to the backlog items of each team. And it will actually let you map, once this loads, lets you map the individual product backlogs back to the feature. So you can then track, as the owner of the feature, what's going on, you know, what's happening with my team project.
Nice.
Now, the other level of detail you can get if you want is features all the way down to tasks. So this allows you to actually see the roll-up of activity as people are putting in hours and states when all the tasks for all the stories for the feature are finished. This will actually reflect that in the web interface. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty cool. Really lets people to do portfolio management. It's a step, I think, in the right direction for bigger, you know, projects. Obviously, if you're just one team project, you can still use this, but I think the biggest value is to those that have to manage across team projects.
Yep.
Right. And features can be opened from Visual Studio. But they're really beautifully visualized here. They also support the board. So if you click on board, you can actually see a Kanban board with right. your features as well. That's pretty cool. So that's going to be our kind of recap of what we already released for the service and what's coming for Team Foundation okay. Server.
Excellent. But
lots more to come. Now, before we jump into Visual Studio, I do want to make another comment. We have also released the Team Foundation service load testing, and at Build, we're finally going to make it available for folks to take advantage of. So at TechEd, we announced this concept, but at Build, we're actually making it available. This will allow load testing to happen in the cloud. It still requires Visual Studio Ultimate. So okay. you still need Visual Studio, just like I brought up here on my screen, and you still need to create a load test project. All of that is the same. The big difference is the load agents will now be available in the cloud. So you'll be able to go ahead, connect, and take advantage of load testing elastically. You can say, you know, I need 100 simulated yeah, users cool. or 1,000. That's pretty awesome. So that's going to require Visual Studio. Not going to show that today, but just wanted to mention that's coming mm-hmm. out of Build. I'm very excited, so as many folks I talk to. So let's talk about what is on our screen right now. This is Visual Studio 2013 preview. The bits are finally shipping. Folks that did watch TechEd have seen this, you know, in videos and such, but now you yeah. can get your hands on it. It also comes with .NET 4.5.1, another iteration of .NET, bringing more capability. We'll talk about some of that later today in this presentation. And one of the first things that I think will jump out to many folks is that the UI just looks a little bit more colorful. Now, mm-hmm. Robert and I were chatting about this. It could be subtle to some, but I want to show you a comparison. I really love the fact that this UI is getting brighter. So I'm going to open up 2012 just to give you a comparison of what that looks like. And let's open up an actual project in 2012. I think this will be best illustrated side by side. There we go. So let's take a look at what's different here. First of all, the toolbar, folks will notice that it's more colorful. We've got blue, we got, you know, yellow, orange. I think the icons are standing out a little bit more. Mm-hmm. There's been a huge investment across the entire Visual Studio 2013 to make the icons brighter and much more compelling. If you look at the Solution Explorer as well, side by side here, we've got some really nice, I think, colors going on. Personally, I really love it. I also see that they've redesigned a bunch of icons as well. I think, again, this is an evolutionary step. It's not changing how the interface looks. It's not as drastic as, you know, in some iterations we've had in the past, but it's pretty awesome because you've got so much color.
Yep.
You think you can grow to love this? I already have. Yeah, I think it's heading in the right direction. One other panel that really has changed a lot is the Team Explorer. So this is the Team Explorer in 2013. You can see that the homepage of it looks a lot more colorful. You've got icons that really make the main things you might want to do stand out right away. For
this
you.
One I noticed the first time I saw it.
Yeah, it's hard not to notice. I think it's a really step in the right direction. There's links up there now to open up the team room, the task board, web access. Everything is fairly accessible, so all the web functionality. And then these bigger buttons here, the tiles, let you get to things like pending changes, right? So you mm-hmm. click on pending changes. It still looks like pending changes did before, but now you have an easier experience, I think, visually to find it. And this is what I'm about to show next, probably the number one requested change to Team Explorer that we could have done, and we did it. We finally allow you guys to once again unlock pending changes. So if you click on this little button here, you can make pending changes its own,
cool.
fully dockable, so we can move it wherever
move
we
it
want.
To a second monitor,
yep.
the whole shebang.
Yeah, so we can see pending changes. We also did that for builds.
Nice.
Right, so that whenever you see this little arrow pointing mm-hmm. to the top right, click on it, the panel will pop out, and then you can take advantage of it. Now, once you do pop it out, you can close it, and then you can still go back in here and say, well, pending changes, right?
Right.
So you never lost pending changes. If you accidentally closed it, Team Explorer is still your way to go. So that's pretty cool. Now, another capability that's really specific to just the generic IDE, right? So the look and feel is probably the first thing that'll hit people if they care about such things. But the other experience is this top right indication right here. The top right indication is letting me know that I'm signed in.
Signed in.
It's actually pretty cool and exciting. So the signed in experience uses the Microsoft account. When you start Visual Studio the first time, obviously I didn't, I had this installed already, but the first time folks download the bits, they start Visual Studio, they're going to see an optional login request. Now, if they do log in using their Microsoft ID.
Optional. The key here is optional.
Yeah, they can hit cancel, you know, and go the old-fashioned way, but it's going to give you two big advantages. The first advantage is, since Visual Studio 2013 bits are in preview, They're in preview for a limited use time, so you need to register to use them. Otherwise, the bits will expire. Mm-hmm. So by logging in, you get that registration automatically. So you don't have to go somewhere, get some serial key. You know, none of that sort of hassle is there for you. But the bigger feature for me is synchronization of settings. So finally, Visual Studio is trying to take a bunch of settings, not everything yet, but a bunch of settings across the IDE and sync them to the cloud. So if you logged in and you move from one machine to another machine, once you log in on the second machine, if you have that experience enabled, again, even you can log in, let's say, just to register Visual Studio, but turn off synchronization of settings. You can do that,
okay.
But by default, it's on.
So what types of things will be synced?
Yeah, let's take a look. So I'm going to go into this nifty quick search bar. I'm going to type sync, not even the full word. It's going to give me synchronized settings. And if I bring that up, we have a bunch of categories of settings that are now synchronized. We have the ability to just enable or disable it as a whole, and categories like appearance, fonts, keyboard shortcuts. I think this is all very much what people often change, right?
Mm-hmm.
Your fonts of your machine, or do you want the blue UI or the black UI or the white UI, what kind of theme you want to select. So that's all synced for you now in the cloud.
Yes. So that's excellent. Yeah. So you change your fonts, you decide that you want your code fonts to be something else, and now each time you start up Visual Studio on all 2, 3, 4, 5 of your machines, those will sync over.
Yeah, so now, excellent. I mean, I'm that scenario. I have a bunch of virtual machines where I'm just always expecting the same experience. I've got my home machine, I've got my work machine, I'm using the same Microsoft account, used to be called Live ID, across all those machines, everything's in sync.
Or even if you're on one machine, you go and repave it, and then install Visual Studio. Now you have
times,
to remember
right?
all the settings. You have
which
to
font did
fonts,
I use?
Yes.
What keyboard shortcut did I use?
Yep, very cool.
I love this. I mean, call me giddy, but this is one of the silly little things I get really excited about. All right, so that's lots of cool capabilities here. All right, next I want to show you guys a bunch of capabilities that are going to be through this virtual machine. So I'm going to bring it up to full screen. Just give me a second here. All right, there we go. And I want to show you some features that we added that partially rely on Team Foundation Server 2013 preview.
Mm-hmm.
So one very, very cool capability that we added is this notion of a heads-up display over code. So I'm going to go ahead and open up a C# code file in my project here. I'm just going to take my, let's say, home controller. And I'm going to build this project here. Show you guys what will happen. Okay, so now that I've gone ahead and connected this project to Team Foundation Server 2013 preview, I get code lens indicators above my code methods.
Code lens.
Code lens is what we're calling this feature. We're really excited. We have, I think, a good name that represents what this is.
One word or two? Code lens.
One word.
Got
code
it.
Lens. Big L. And code lens allows you to see a bunch of information, metadata, around your class, and even more detail around each method within your class. So let's go show you an example. The first thing that's in a code lens is references. You can go ahead and see references in your code. If you click on references, you're going to get a little pop-up over your code that's dismissed whenever you click somewhere, so it's not like a separate window or something that you have on your screen. But when you click on it, you can see where home controller is being referenced. So you can see that somebody's creating a new home controller somewhere else in code. There's at least one reference to it.
Yep.
How many times do we want to know that? Hey, somebody is something in my code using this method, right?
Right.
The constructor is one example, but of course, let's talk about more specific scenarios, right? Index. Is somebody calling index? So yes, somebody is actually calling index.
So is that the same functionality as find all references?
This is find all references on steroids because it's just available there for you.
Right.
Right. So,
you don't have to go remember the keyboard shortcut or remember the menu choice or right click and go find all references. Is now display all references.
Yes. Yes.
Yep.
It's pretty cool. So now that it's showing you, if you put the mouse over, it actually gives you even bigger preview of what the code looks like, what file it is, which line it's on in the file. Very, very cool. Then if you double click, it'll actually go to the code file.
Right.
Of where it is. So you can see right away the value of being able to understand references much easier.
Yep.
Let's go back and take a look what else is there. We also have the capability to see another very important piece of information. So references is just solution project metadata, right?
Mm-hmm.
We just know what references you. You don't have to have Team Foundation Server 2013 to get that information. That will always be available in Visual Studio 2013. Now, if you have 2013 Server hooked up, with CodeLens enabled on the server, then you'll get information such as the change sets that infected this specific part of the code file, and also who was the last person to change it. This could be, or created, right, in the first place. This could be very powerful. Again, how many times do you want to know who created this code? Who do I go talk to? What change sets affected it? Or maybe you come in and you're like, two change sets? Who else changed this? I'm the only one working on it, you know? So you get all sorts of kind of insightful information. When you click on the person here, you can actually see, this is our simulated users, you can actually see who's been changing this code. This is the last person to touch it.
Okay.
And this is where the change happened. Change set number 7 modified the code. You can also click on change sets and see more information about change sets. Now, in this case, we don't have a lot of users.
Is there a way to have these expire? Because I see here that was 14 months ago.
But it's still relevant. I mean, look at it from a real-world project. You open up a class file. It was modified 12 months ago, and now you're the next guy down the line who has to change it. Why change that? Who was the person? Oh, it was Robert. Robert, I can't believe he did this, right? And then you can start a little team room discussion, you know, if everyone's in the team room enough to be in the same place.
Okay.
So that's CodeLens indicators. Now, another capability, let's see if I can show you this real quick. I'm going to open up unit tests. Which controllers am I testing? All right, I've got customer controller. All right, let's open up customer controller. Let's open up test explorer. Let's do run all tests. Hopefully my pre-build bits will work just fine here. Let's give it a second. If it doesn't, we'll just talk through it. All right, it's being mean to me. That's fine. So one of the other indicators that you will see here in the preview bits, I know they work in the preview bits on another machine I have, so my apologies here, but you'll actually see the unit tests that apply to this method. So you can really get a sense of code coverage within your project.
Does it show you whether it succeeded or failed?
Yes. So when you run the test, you can see the state. You can see past, you know, one of two, let's say, and you'll know one failed. Then you click on it, you can jump to the unit test.
Nice.
So
that's nice. That's a lot of information in that little line.
Yes, it's a ton of info. Sorry it didn't work. As with all good demos, we do our best here at Microsoft.
It is a preview,
and I'm running the preview edition. You know, it's like pulling up these demos ahead of time sometimes is tough. So let's talk about some other cool capabilities. Another change that we made, and this one applies to VB.NET, C#, C++, a lot of different files, is around the code window itself. So I'm going to go back again, open up another file, let's say customer controller. And let's talk about the scroll bar. The scroll bar is where we've put a bunch of effort and we took input from our Power Tools. And Power Tools is something Microsoft releases as kind of an experimental extension. Our folks work in their spare time, like literally people work at nights and weekends to make this thing happen. And we put features into Visual Studio that we hope one day we'll make it into a real product. Well, we have a bunch of features that did this time. We took the features like this. We said, which features are voted highly? Which features do we see are used? Which features we know people are excited about? They've had a chance to try them, so it's not like we're throwing something experimental at them now. We're now taking the experimental and making it a real thing for those people. In the scroll bar, we now added a right-click options menu. So if you right-click on the scroll bar, you're going to see scroll bar options. When you click on scroll bar options, you're going to see a bunch of options you didn't have before. You now have the ability to turn on and off different kind of annotations. Annotations are things you see in the scroll bar. I'll show you what that looks like in a second. One of the new ones to kind of point out is the caret position. And this is kind of, at first I was like, why do we do it? And I'm like, yeah, this is very useful. I think about this all the time. Where do I click in a file relative to where am I in the file? So let me show you what that looks like. This is on by default, even without you going to options. So this little blue line here, if I click somewhere in the code, right, as I'm scrolling down, I'm like customer. Oh, there you go.
Okay.
It caught up. Oh, I'm so excited.
Good.
All right, there. I can show the fact that CodeLens is showing you whether or not a build succeeded or failed. I mean, a test succeeded or failed on this particular create method. I made one fail by design, by the way. My code is perfect. I just made it fail for the demo.
Yeah,
I got to show that.
Yeah.
And now, look, if let's say I want to see what happened here. If I double click on it, I jump to the test. I can come in here and say, okay, now I understand what the test is looking like, and I can go and try to figure out why it failed. But anyway, let's go back to what we're trying to show here. Now, this caret position, as you scroll away, we know that our mouse cursor is still up here. So if you're looking around and now you want to go back to where you were visually, it's so easy. Mm-hmm. Think about how many times you do that when you really develop and you're like doing something, you scroll away, and then you have to scroll back. You're going back and forth to get some piece of information or insight into another piece of code. I think this is super useful.
Yep.
All right. Now, if we want to take it to the next level, we'll go to scroll bar. We're going to go map mode. And we're going to enable the default medium map mode with preview tooltip. Click OK. Scroll bar is going to change. It's going to become wider. It's going to give us a visual sense of the code file.
Right.
And this is the whole code file. If you actually click somewhere, first of all, you get the preview, right, when you highlight. So you can actually see the code in more detail. You're like, yes, I want to see delete in my code window. When you click, it actually navigates, so the delete is in the center of your screen. So it is a click to navigate specifically where you are in a file, which is new, right? With a regular scroll bar, clicking somewhere just kind of lumps you downwards, lumps you upwards. This is go directly to where you are. You can still see the caret position, so you can still see like changes. Let's make a change to this file. So now when I scroll away, I can see that my cursor is where it changed.
A pending change
to the file. This is not specific to Team Foundation Server, just a change from the file system.
Right.
We'll show that. That's pretty cool. So that's another capability that we've added. Yet beyond this, we have even other things. Another common scenario that people do all the time is they go to the definition of something. You're in this code, you're looking at action results, and you're wondering, what is customer? Does customer have some property? All right, so traditional, right? Right click, and then you say go to definition.
Mm-hmm.
You open up. Now, we've made it easier in 2012. We added these temporary windows, right?
Yep.
So you're not opening up tons of files. So you can say, okay, I understand. But what if you don't want to leave context here at all? The new peak definition capability, so peak definition is in the menu right here, Alt F12 is a keyboard, will allow you to get an inline view, and you can actually go ahead and expand this if you want, of the file. Has its own scroll bar, so see, you can scroll through this file just like you can. It's a read-only view.
That's sweet.
And you can see it, so from the perspective of the user, you hit escape, you're back to working, right? So you're coding, you're typing away,
mm-hmm.
you get here, you go Alt F12, you look at the code, it's just so keyboard friendly. You hit escape and you're out of the code.
Yep.
Or if you want, if you do value it, so let's say you go to peak definition and you're like, I need to keep looking at this. You can promote it to a regular window, and now it becomes a regular open window in your project. So peak definition, code lens, all these capabilities together, I think make just working with code a lot easier, and you'll see it works across a bunch of languages.
Now, do you know on the enhanced scroll bar, do you know if, are there features that weren't in the productivity power tools, or is everything that you just showed in the scroll bar, did it first appear in the productivity power tools?
A bunch of it did, not everything, from what I remember.
Okay.
It's a little rusty. I've been learning a lot about 2013,
so forgive me,
but I'm pretty sure like caret position is new.
Caret
for
position,
example.
Okay.
Yeah, if it was there, you have my apologies, but I think we've covered everything. So those are some really cool capabilities in there. Now we're going to talk about web development. Did we tell our audience this is a whirlwind?
Yes.
I'm like drinking water like crazy. I'm just talking, man. I hope folks are keeping up, but we'll make sure this is a good episode here. We'll show you a ton of cool stuff. Let's talk about web development. So we showed Connected ID, right? We showed how that's kind of cool. The UI is getting prettier, more colors. I think that's all nice. We showed lots of code editor features, settings, synchronization. But now let's talk about a subject near and dear to a lot of people, this concept of web development. The web developer spends a lot of time doing the following. I'm going to try to demonstrate it here on the screen real quick. I'm going to go to index, and I'm going to make some changes in HTML.
Mm-hmm.
I just typed in some stuff. Press F5, I'm going to run this project, and I'm going to look at what it looks like. I want to see what a browser representation is. All right, so Internet Explorer shows it like this. A lot of real project, though, you'll see people opening up Internet Explorer, then I've seen people cut and paste that URL. They just got there into Chrome or
Chrome
configure
and Safari,
Safari and
Opera,
Firefox.
Whatever,
you got to make
yep.
sure it looks right.
Exactly.
And you have the second or third or fourth monitor that you have, depending on how many you've hooked up. And you have all these browsers open,
right.
And you've got to keep refreshing them to see what do my changes look like. We've made it a little bit easier in 2012. I'll give the team lots of credit there. They've added the ability to choose the default browser that you're using. You can open up multiple browsers. There's a lot of capability.
Mm-hmm.
With 2013, you get one more addition to that family. You get the ability called Browser Link. Browser Link is this button that's up here right now. And it shows you if a browser is connected to your project. So we're going to run this again. And we're going to imagine that I'm running this on two different monitors. So I'm going to...
Or even on the same monitor. It works on one
monitor. Yeah, of course. I'm just, you know, thinking of how I develop stuff at home. I have one really big monitor, one kind of, what my wife calls the normal size monitor, because the other one really is huge, but I like it for coding purposes. And I'm going to make this, you know, because I have a really small resolution, I'm going to make this scroll bar a little bit tinier just to show you guys what we're talking about. So now we have code on the left. We have Visual Studio running or not running. It doesn't really matter as long as the web server is up and running. And what has happened right now is the Visual Studio has actually created, under the hood, you don't see anything, you don't do anything, a Signal R bridge into your page. This is just for development purposes. When you when you put this thing into production, that bridge disappears. The code doesn't exist in your page. It's just a Visual Studio runtime developer experience.
So then this only works on localhost, or does this work on websites hosted somewhere else?
That's a good question. Now, localhost, of course, that's where it works. But beyond that, we'll have to stay tuned for build sessions and learn all about browser link. You stumped me on this one, so I'll give you credit. Not sure.
Okay.
But I do know it works in the traditional developer scenario, right? You're running on localhost, IIS Express, or local IIS, and you're debugging. So there's been a magical bridge created. The reason why is now when you make changes in code, so I'm going to go ahead and say, no, not build. I really meant TechEd. And I'm going to hit Alt Control Enter just to rebuild the solution. My browser just refreshed.
Yep.
I don't know if people caught that. Let's do it again. Please look at me in the right window. There you go. Please look at me. It's changing. You might have three browsers open at the same time. The cool thing about browser link is that when you hit save here in Visual Studio, all of them will refresh. Now, when you do that and all of them refresh, you also get the capability that your cursor position is not lost. So it's not like we're doing send keys or something magical behind the scenes, right? We're actually refreshing the browser. So I'm still here. I can still continue to edit, right? I can change this window, hit refresh. I can keep editing. My browser is going to change on the right. Well, let's make a change that people can actually see, right? So there you go. I'm changing it. And as I'm still typing, it's refreshing the browser. And it could the cool thing is multiple browsers, right? You can have two, three browsers open. They're all refreshing while you're still developing HTML and CSS. For preview, there's a lot more to come. Okay. I just don't want to spoil it for folks because I'm not supposed to be announcing any new features, but they're working on some really, really cool stuff. So that's a browser link. And that kind of ends my part of the session there.
All right. Damian Edwards at TechEd did a great demo of this. We'll post to his talk. Let's show this one ASP.NET, though, before we get off web
development. Oh, yes. Thank you so much. You reminded me. So one more thing to show. Arguably, the bigger thing, or maybe one of the big things. Let's see where people place it in their things that they like you. Error. You didn't see that? Did I mention preview bits? So let's show you one ASP.NET. I'm going to go to File New Project, and I'm going to go and search for ASP.NET. And I'm going to have the option to create what's called an ASP.NET web application. I'm going to select it. And I'm going to see a dialog which folks, unless you watch something at TechEd, have never seen before.
There's another way to do this. Let me just stop you right here.
Yep.
Cancel.
All right.
Click Web, and notice that there's only ASP.NET web application.
Yes.
Expand Web.
Yep, there's going to be stuff
and
under there.
And there's the other ones.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So go back to web.
Yeah.
So in the past, there was web application. There was MVC. There were all these various
web forms and all
types,
this other
web
stuff.
Form. Yep. Yeah. Now there's a web application.
Yes.
And now, when you go on, now you can select a template, whether it's web forms or MVC or web API. So
yes.
Select MVC.
Yep. And the cool thing here is we're mixing and matching. We're creating a baseline. Let's say web forms is our baseline. We can add MVC or add a web API.
Right. So web API, which used to be a project template, but is really just an interface to getting data, right? It's really just a framework. If you think about it, it says MVC. So what this now gives you the ability to do is to mix and match. You might want MVC control, MVC inside a web forms app. You certainly want a web forms and web API. So now it's a lot easier to basically create a website and have these various ways of organizing the project. Because, of course, under the hood, it's just one runtime. It's just all ASP.NET.
Yeah, it's really cool. And the way that I've described it to folks is this notion of tooling, right? You're no longer limited by tooling of needing to know exactly where you should start. You can start with web forms.
Right.
And then you can choose to add more, but let's say you don't, right? Let's say you choose just web forms. You can hit create project. This project will be created without a sort of identity of a specific, you know, MVC versus web forms. And when you right-click, the scaffolding support will let you add a controller from MVC. And the tooling will just do that for you. So those are the huge advantages of this one ASP.NET concept. There's going to be a lot of great sessions from between TechEd and Build for folks to learn all about it. And I'm sure you'll have somebody come by talk about
so
it.
So there's
well.
Now a scaffolding framework that is inside web forms, websites.
Yep. Add new item. And now you can choose the kind of item you want to add. So let's say you wanted to add the web API controller to this web forms project. You can just go ahead and do that, and it will add the controller. It will add the right references, DLLs that are needed to support this implementation. So it's a huge advantage to people. They're no longer limited. And if you open an existing project, like let's say you have an MVC project you've been working on for a long time, when you open that project up in 2013 and right-click the tooling without modifying your project, will give you the ability to add, let's say, a web API or web forms view.
Yeah, so it's
very powerful.
We're moving away from this bifurcated world where I build web forms websites or I build MVC websites. Yeah. Now we're moving to I build websites and web forms, MVC, web API, they're tools.
Yes.
Now.
The capabilities are for you to choose and mix and match whatever's the best tool for the job.
If you think about it, you know, if you build a client app, you got to choose your language, VB or C#, but it's really just the tool you use. You can think of it as just the tool you use to talk to this exact same framework. So whether you build a WPF app in VB or WP app in C#, at runtime, you're just talking to the same .NET runtime. And your choice of language is really the words you use to talk to the API and make things happen. So it's really just a tool. It's not
100%. The tooling experience
is
just supporting
you. We didn't
have
that quite so much in the web until now.
Yeah, so. This is really great. Thank you for reminding me on that. So that's all for the web.
Okay. So let's switch over, and I'm going to do some demos on debugging and diagnostics, and then we'll take a quick look at Windows Store apps. So
sounds good.
Okay, so here's my machine, and what I'm going to do is I've got a very simple WPF application running. Okay, so let's just start this. I made this about as simple as I could get. I didn't even style it, so it's Battleship White ugly, but that's fine. Now, if we go into the properties, we'll notice that I am targeting 64-bit. Okay? And now I'm going to put a breakpoint here, and I'm going to run this. And as I'm running this, I decide that I really don't want this to say VS. I want this to say Visual Studio. Dimitri, we have edit and continue for 64-bit applications.
It's pretty cool,
Woo-hoo!
Isn't it?
Yeah. we've heard this request a lot from web developers, but in all fairness to the client developers, they asked for it first.
Yeah,
so
I'm
now
sure.
Everybody's happy.
Yeah, this is really cool, and this is part of .NET 4.5.1. You're going to see a bunch of capabilities in .NET that are coming through the .NET 4.5.1 release. You know, we really are trying to make certain scenarios that have been painful for a long time. Again, looking at what customers want and trying to make those capabilities happen. This is one of them. It supports a bunch of different frameworks. So, you know, it doesn't matter if you're WPF or web, you can edit and continue. All the existing restrictions apply, but it's a really cool capability.
All right, so now let's switch over to another feature. So I have this Windows Store app that happens to be written in XAML and C#, and it crashed. Okay, so I call my buddy on the product team and I said, hey, my app crashed. And what's the first thing he does is he asks for, you know, send me the dump. So I can create the dump, but I don't really know what to do with it other than to create it and send it off to him and see if he has anything to say. So now in Visual Studio 2012, I could open up the dump file. So here's expenses.dmp. I could open this in Visual Studio, and it kind of tells me what the modules are, but you know, it doesn't necessarily give me a whole heck of a lot of information. Okay? So let's pop over to Visual Studio 2013.
And you can tell it's 2013 because look at all that color, right?
That's right.
You noticed probably the first thing.
Open up the expenses dump file. And now, notice a couple of additional options. One to debug with managed only, but also one to debug managed memory. So if I click debug managed memory, and this starts up, analyzes the heap, and now I can see up here a list of objects, how many times they've been called, total memory they're taking up. And then if I expand one of these and check out the various instances, I can see down here in the bottom pane each of the objects that are referencing each of these types.
Yeah, and this is very useful in situations where you suspect a crash is related to what's actually loaded in the memory or how much memory is being used. This is useful when debugging memory leaks, you know, a very common scenario.
Yep.
So you can take a memory dump. In fact, you can take two, and this will actually compare. You can use this to compare two memory dumps side by side. So there's some
you
cool capabilities.
You just gave away something I was going to show.
That's what happens when we underplan and over-execute.
So what I can do is I can search. So I know that this was happening in the charges view model, so I can search for that, easily find it, and then look at the various objects that were being called. And so now, as you mentioned, I make a bunch of changes, and I want to see if I've been able to affect anything. So what I can do is come up here and from select baseline, open up another version of this file. And now I can look at the difference. And because this V2 is just a copy, no big surprise, there are no changes.
No, nothing changed. Wow.
Yes, nothing changed. So all that code
this
I
is
wrote
useful.
Has had no effect.
No, this
it's
is actually
very
useful.
Useful.
You know what it tells you? That you copied the file twice accidentally and now you're telling somebody to compare it. So you
it could,
you,
it
you
could
catch
do
one
that.
Of those.
You can catch mistakes like that. You can also see if you've made any difference.
Yes, very, very useful, especially memory leaks. I think people yep. will really enjoy this feature.
Andrew Hall has a blog post about this that just went up, and we'll link to that. But this is a very, very cool feature. Okay, so now let's stop this. What I want to do now is pop over and talk about Windows Store apps a little bit. So I'm going to create a brand new Windows Store app. And I want to show that, of course, we have the same familiar blank app, grid app, split app. But we also have this new type of app called the Hub app.
Right. Okay. And just to add a couple of words there. So one of the common visual experiences in Windows Store apps that people are familiar with, if you've run Windows 8 to any extent, is this like horizontal right layout of different groups of content.
Mm-hmm.
This is what the Hub app is trying to give developers. Finally, a built-in Microsoft-built control for XAML application that lets them create the same experience.
Yeah, so let's create a Hub app. And now let's run it. And so now here is my Hub app. So I have my hero icon, my hero image here, and then I have various sections. And in this sample, some of them are turned on, some of them are not. So this is meant to be read-only. Here I can click and go down and view this item. I can scroll back and forth amongst the various sections. So I have the ability to do more than just the simple grid view, rows and columns of rectangles. I can make apps that look a little bit more like the news apps. And, you know, for whether it's a consumer app or even a line of business app, for example, I could make this image, I could put sort of like KPIs and dashboard here.
Well, this could be Visual Studio Toolbox, right? A big logo, and you
sure.
could have all your shows
exactly.
here. You could do all sorts of cool
stuff. I
could
do that, yep. Yeah. Okay, so.
And this is just one of the controls. They're adding a bunch of new controls for XAML. Mm-hmm. There's stuff happening for WinJS, HTML as well. We love both platforms. We see a lot of developers using both. So you're going to see the tooling expand the capability for both HTML and XAML developers.
Yep. So what I want to do now, before we explore some more of the code here, is I want to finish talking about the diagnostic stuff. So if I go to debug and performance and diagnostics, we have now. Did I lose track of what I was doing? Nope. Okay. So we now have this performance and diagnostics option, which brings up the diagnostics hub. And I have a show on this that will be airing in a couple of weeks with Andrew Hall.
Yeah, and just to talk to this hub a little bit. So the official name for this screen is the Performance and Diagnostic Hub, because it brings together tools from different places. A lot of them are performance specific today, but you can certainly see this becoming the way that people interact with different kind of tooling for performance and diagnostic purposes from one place.
Yep.
This has been my frustration, you know, and other people's frustration. There's tools all over the place, and you have this one concept you're trying to address. And now there's one place, you go there, you select the project, it figures out for you which tools actually work with your project.
Right.
So if you were running a WPF app, it will show you the tools for WPF. This works across .NET, HTML for Windows 8, XAML. It doesn't matter. It does that for you, so that's pretty cool.
Right. So what we have in here are one place to see all of the diagnostic tools. So of course we have CPU sampling. What we have, these two are new, is energy consumption and XAML UI responsiveness. So the energy consumption is going to give me the ability to see how much energy is being consumed in my application so I can get a sense of what its impact is on battery life. So very, very useful in the mobile tablet scenarios.
Yeah.
So
and it's an estimation. You know, it does its best to sort of figure out.
Start the application. We'll play around. We'll move from place to place, etc. Okay, then we'll switch back here. We'll stop collecting. And so now I can see how much energy is being used at various places inside the app.
Yeah, and if you were doing network calls and such, mm-hmm. on the left there, you can actually filter down to different kind of antennas, because different antennas tend to be where the power drain happens, right? It's either CPU or it's calling some network resource. So this is very, very useful. We're not doing it justice, right? We got to get a full show just on this.
Actually, we do have a full show on this.
There you go.
It's already taped. It'll be up in a couple of weeks.
Awesome.
That's one of the reasons I'm moving a little bit more quickly through this. The other thing that I want to look at, if I go to the right place, is the XAML UI responsiveness. So we want to be able to see where time is being spent in the app. And this is great if you start an app and it takes a while to start and you really want to figure out why, or if you just want to have a good sense of what the overall responsiveness is. So we'll run this app. This one seems to show up pretty quickly, of course, because it's not pulling data down from a service or anything. But we'll move around, and then we'll come back into Visual Studio, stop collection. Okay. So now at the top, we see the CPU utilization. So we eat up a bunch of CPU when we start, and then there's a big pause, and then we've got some spikes here. We can drill down on those. What we can also do is drag this and kind of filter on these, right? So see what's going on up there. Then what we can do is, so right now we're looking at parsing, but if we click the hot elements, then we'll actually see what's literally being done. So CPU utilization up top, frame rate down here, and then we can see how much time is being spent. So this hub, all right, I can drill down and I can see all the various things, the scroll viewer takes a bunch of time, the list view items, et cetera. I can really drill down on the elements that are causing the time. It gives me a much better idea of getting a sense of why the application's behaving the way it's behaving in terms of UI responsiveness.
Cool. And this was available in the previous release of Visual Studio for HTML, JavaScript, Windows Store developers.
Yes.
And now it's available
for
XAML
development
developers.
Is new. So if I now, if we pop over and check how this works out in JavaScript, so let's go create a JavaScript store app, and here's the hub app. Let's create the exact same app, and why do I keep clicking in the wrong place? Because performance
and
project begin with P.
There you go.
So here's the same page. We have the CPU sampling. We have JavaScript memory, which was introduced in 2012 update 1. Energy consumption, which is brand new in 2013. The JavaScript profiler, which was in Visual Studio 2012 RTM.
You're good, man. Or
and
you
then
have
the
good
HTML
notes.
UI responsiveness was introduced in update 2.
Yes.
Yes, yes, I did that all off the top of my
I
head.
Think
the
you
fact
did.
That I have notes in front of me that say the same thing was
I'm
my backup.
I'm not even looking. I'm not even looking.
That was my backup.
I think you impressed me.
So let's do the HTML UI responsiveness. This. So for people who wonder, you know, JavaScript versus XAML, you know, occasionally we get asked, oh, what's the performance like? And now you can
decide for yourself, because you can run the exact same tests and see if you can spot any difference.
Yeah, the great thing is, of course,
we should probably start.
Probably. The great thing here is that the tools are aligning the same across the two capabilities of building JavaScript or XAML apps. We really want to empower both sides of the fence, and resources being what they are, you got to move at the best pace you can. But it's awesome that we're catching up and making the tools available for
everybody. Here's how this looks in a JavaScript app.
Yeah, you're going to see very similar, just the connotations, right, are different. We have a DOM, we have divs and such.
Here, you're going to spend a lot of time checking to see, your style calculations and how much time it takes to be laying out the actual screen. Okay, so that is the diagnostic stuff. One last thing I wanted to show on debugging and diagnosis before we explore the new stuff in Windows Startups a little bit more is debugging. So let me call up a different project. I have to remember which one it is. Here it is. Happily, I named it JS Async Debug. So I can save my hub reports and then come back to them. Okay, so let's go over to Visual Studio 2012 first. I think this was the one. Yes, okay. So I have a simple little app here that's going to give me the ability to pick a file, pick an image, and then I'm going to open a text file, right? And what I want to do is I want to make sure that I haven't renamed this and broken the demo.
And this is a Windows Store 8 app,
of course I have.
Right? You're using Visual Studio 2012 at this point.
Okay.
And nothing different in here. Just
okay. So I run the app, and when I get started, I'm going to find a picture. I like this one, and then it's going to open the caption file and display the caption. And I don't actually have that code in here at the moment, but that's fine. So I used the picker to get the file, and then I opened caption.txt, which is an asynchronous call. Okay, so now let's say the app breaks, because whoever created this caption file for me decided to call it picture caption. Okay, you would predict that this app's now going to break. Okay, so let's run this. I get started. I pick a file. And of course, it blows up, right? The system cannot find the file specified.
Very useful.
That is actually very useful. Where is this? Now, in this simple little app, I kind of know, but let's say this is a real-sized application. I don't know, cannot find. So I do get a little more information. I'm looking for caption.txt.
But you're not seeing the code.
So I could do a search. So I break, and we come into the call stack. And where did this come from? I don't know. I don't get any additional information in here, right? So now I got to go search for caption.txt, which could be called in five different places.
Yeah, for sure. So that's very common, right? You have a similar code in different parts of the application.
Yeah. So it's a very kind of manual process, time-consuming. All right, so now let's come over to this same app. This is now a Windows Store 8.1 app written in Visual Studio 2013. Get started. It should have blown up.
Your app works better than expected.
That's impossible. Okay, let's try this again. There we go. We get the exact same error. Okay, now we break. We come into the call stack, and now look at what we have. We are showing the async calls. So now if we come down here, we see that on click, something called bug repro, double click on bug repro, there is the problem. I go directly to it. Now, the interesting thing about this is enabled by things added to Windows. So Windows 8.1 brings us the ability to put this inside Visual Studio. So this is not just a thing that you get to do in store apps. This would also work in desktop apps as well, or ASP.NET apps.
Yes. Yeah, this works across, and yes. It's very awesome to have this kind of logical call stack now, as opposed to just seeing the physical one, which Windows before provided. Yep. Windows 8.1 gives us just this so much richer information stream to use.
Right. I taped a show with Brad Sullivan on this async debugging. That will also appear in a couple weeks or so. So
your show is going to be popular, I think, over the next coming couple of weeks and months
yes.
to come.
Okay, so now let's go back a little bit and check out some of these enhancements in Windows Store apps, is what I'm trying to say. So here's the XAML version of, that's just a grid. Oops, opened the wrong one. All right, let's take a hub app, and I'm going to name this XAML hub app in case I need to open it up again. I created it as JavaScript. All right.
Oops.
Fair enough.
Happens.
That's okay, because you know what? I want to show it in both. So let's pop open another instance of 2013. Did it show up?
Right click, and then there it goes. Just catching up.
There it is. Okay. So now let's create one of each. Let's create a XAML hub app. Did I call the other one XAML hub app?
Might want to call this one XAML Hub Up too. Come on, real-time demos, you got to love them. Really XAML Hub Up. Really, really.
Let's call it the real XAML.
Don't mess up here. You're running out of reallys.
I know. So this is the real XAML Hub app as opposed to that pretender. Okay, so let's take a look at the hub page. And the hub page, if we go and look at the XAML, contains, if we scroll down, a new control, which is hub. So there's now a hub control, which you could actually see in the toolbox. So if we look at the XAML controls, here's a hub control as well as a hub section. So this hub consists of a hub, and it's got a header, and you can click on the header. So then hub.header defines what appears in that header. Then there are sections. So the parent is the hub, and the children, if you will, are the sections. So you create a hub section, and this is the first one that just had that gray box. And then there's another hub section, and it can contain data elements. You can put list views in here and grid views. So it's basically a way of organizing. It's just sections on the home page built in to XAML. If we pop over to the fake hub app, then we should be able to go look at the hub page. All right. And again, this has hub and section. So it works exactly the same way.
Very similar concept. Different notation.
Yes. Okay, so let's look a little bit more at some of the new controls. So in XAML, we now have an app bar button separator and toggle button control. We have a command bar control. We have date picker, very cool, which we missed in the previous version. We now have flyouts in addition
to. I really like that one. The flyouts very
and setting. There is a setting. Where's my setting? There is a settings flyout control. I'm not sure why it's not showing up in here, but there is one. And then there's also the time picker. So there's date and time pickers, there's flyouts and settings controls. So I think a lot of us, to get things like flyouts and settings, went and used Tim Heuer's Callisto framework. Yep. These are now part of XAML inside the box. If we pop over to JavaScript, we don't actually get to see JavaScript controls in here, do we? Oh, well, there's a back button control, there's an item container, there's a nav bar. So the nav bar, if we show that, I believe there's one in the store. So if we call up the new version of the store and right click, here's the nav bar. So this is now a control You don't have to create an app bar that does the same thing. There's now a nav bar control in JavaScript. There's also a repeater. There's a web view enhancements to the web view control, the ability to create custom app bar buttons, and also in JavaScript apps, you can now drag and drop between list views, which is kind of cool. All right, what else is there? I'm going through this a little bit quickly, A, because of time, and also we'll have an episode devoted to Windows Store apps coming up in the future. We'll do one on XAML and one on JavaScript. So the last thing I want to show in here is a couple additional features. So let's say we're looking through here, and we want to know what application page background theme brush is, right? What color is that? Well, if it was in the standard styles, which is now not even in here, standard styles, which used to be a separate file, is now essentially been kicked up to the system level. So you can go find that file. But what you can also do is right-click on this and go to definition. And then it opens up this generic.xaml, which is sitting in a system folder. And we can see that application page background theme brush is that color.
Yeah, I'm just going to say how excited I personally am about this feature.
I know, this is really cool.
Being a XAML developer, finding where that style is, even if it's in your page, right? Just sometimes scrolling up and down can be so painful. This is awesome. It works with the built-in styles, your styles.
Should be able to do this with data templates. Where is this template defined?
Well, you're in the data template.
Oh, you're right. It's defined
there. Let's go to a reference to it. There you go. Right there.
Did I pass it?
Yep, right there in the middle.
Right click, go to definition. There we go. That goes back to the definition. Where is this? Where's that? Where's my item source? I had an item source in here somewhere. Oh, here it is, grouped items view source. Where's that defined? I can go to that. And then also, a very cool feature in here is notice that I'm calling title, subtitle, and description from these. We now have not in there? This worked in maybe the way this is set up. Let me open up this expenses app because I know it was working in there.
Yeah, this feature certainly does work, and what we're trying to show is the IntelliSense within XAML for binding, which has been long overdue. Pretty sure we'll get it working.
Okay.
Certainly works in the public preview bit.
So here. No, it's not working.
Might have to build your solution, or be one of those little quirks.
This is working in practice.
Nothing like wanting to get your demo right.
All right. Well, we'll find it. When we do the show devoted to this, we'll find it and make sure it works.
Yeah, that certainly does work, and it's really cool. And just being able to navigate around your bindings, navigate around your styles, and just common things every XAML developer does is going to be really appreciated by folks.
Yep. All right. Anything else we wanted to show?
I think we covered more than enough for one episode.
All right, so that is a whirlwind tour of many of our favorite features in Visual Studio 2013. We looked at a little bit Windows. I'm running Windows 8.1 preview, so we saw some features that were lit up in 8.1, particularly these things in the store apps, but also the asynchronous debugging is lit up by Windows 8.1. We saw Team Foundation Server preview. So saw a lot. Hope you got a sense that there's a lot in here. Dive in. We'll have links to TechEd and Build episodes and blog entries. And we'll have a lot of the stuff obviously covered on future shows here. So if you haven't downloaded this stuff, go get it. Go play around with it. Let us know what you think. Report any bugs. Make suggestions. Let us know. And hope
see you
enjoyed
next
that.
Time on Channel 9.
See you next time on Visual Studio Toolbox. That's my line.
Ah,
bye.
I saw it. Bye.